Hey everyone, welcome to the Incubator Podcast. I'm your co-host, Darren Boyd.
And this is Sabir Saran. Thank you for joining us today. And we are excited to bring to you Sunil Yu. Sunil is the CISO and head of research over at Jupiter One. We are so lucky to have him, and we're looking to dive into an interesting topic. But before we get right into the thick of it, Sunil, if you wouldn't mind, please, if you can expand upon your background, prolific background that you do have, and then we'll start things from there.
Sure. And thanks for having me. It's great to be on your podcast. So I'm Sunil Yu, and for those who are actually watching the video, you can actually see my history on my wall. But I used to be the chief security scientist at Bank of America for several years, where I ran into the problem that prompted me to create what we're going to be talking about, which is the cyber defense matrix. My role there was to anticipate new and emerging threats and to be able to design a security strategy based on that 18 to 24 months out. And so part of that also involved talking to lots of startups and the vendor ecosystem. And it was very hard to process all the inbounds that we get as buyers of these technologies. And it certainly doesn't help when your CEO says that you have an unlimited budget. So I got a lot of calls on a lot of inbounds trying to sell me stuff. So I spent a couple of years at Bank of America doing that. And then I left Bank of America to work in venture capital for a year. And I'll tell more about that story later, but spent a year telling entrepreneurs, hey, go solve these type of problems. And then lastly, more recently at Jupiter One, running the designing a whole security team and security function, really largely based off the matrix as well. So my journey since Bank of America and at Bank of America really actually follows the story of the book itself, because after I left Bank of America, I tried to write the book and struggled because it was a lot of theory and not enough practice. And so my career after Bank of America was really putting it to practice.
Well, we're definitely excited. I'm going to hold up the book. So the Cyber Defense Matrix, this is applicable to buyers, as you said. This is applicable to folks like Sabir and I, who we often have to position technologies and we struggle with something similar. How do you present them? In what light do you present them? So we look forward to getting in a little bit into the kind of messy representation of your two-dimensional matrix that's really evolves throughout the book as well, which has been fascinating to read and very helpful. But you're also a fellow, an advisor, a researcher, an author. You kind of do it all. So maybe if we can dive into the book a little bit, though. Again, this is going to be really applicable to our listeners, applicable to ourselves and others. I imagine this started, maybe not formally, but maybe informally, when you were at Bank of America and you were doing all these evaluations. Can you walk us through why this came to be? And when did you recognize the problem and start working on building what turned into this book in the first place?
Yeah. So I'm sure people have had this experience before. You go talk to a vendor at an expo hall or you take a call, whatever it is. And shortly after, maybe, I don't know, give it an hour, give it a day. And someone asks you, oh, so tell me about that vendor that you just met. And you draw a blank because you've met 20 other vendors in between, especially when you go to an expo, you know, when you see a bunch of vendors all at once, and just recall was hard. And there's a practice among those who there's like this memory competition, and among those who practice memorizing just crazy number of things, one of the things that they use is what they call memory palace, where they use the location of things as an anchor to remember where things are, to remember a sequence of numbers or a deck of cards. I mean, just random things that they come across. Well, the cyber defense matrix is also a mechanism, a tool that one can use to easily recall vendors you may have met, because you actually physically put them into, or at least mentally, you put them into a into the cyber defense matrix and say, okay, I just met this vendor, they're in application protect, and I met this vendor and they're in network identify. And so I have this visual memory of where different vendors fit. some people say I have an encyclopedic memory, and I don't actually, of security vendors. I just have a visual memory of where they fit. And from there, I can then recall other aspects of what they do because, oh, yes, they're in this box and they perform, they're a WAF in Application Protect. So they do, different companies do different types of things, and I can dive into the subcategory based on just having the initial recollection of what shopping aisle they're in. And so it provided that just a simple mechanism to remember vendors. But then it also provided a mechanism to just really cut through all the BS that they throw at you so that you can actually say, okay, look, if I can only put them in one box, then let's make sure that I put them in the box that they are most competent at, what their primary capability is. Now, granted, you know, you meet vendors that have a whole suite of other capabilities, and that's going to be a little harder because it's hard to place their whole suite of product into just one box. But then this is where the specific products or specific features that they have for a given product, we can figure out where they fit. But anyway, generally, when you're meeting with startups who only have one thing that they sell, they can fit into one box, and that's pretty easy. And again, it helps with the recall.
Yeah. So with that, Sunil, so that helps from, I guess, a vendor valuation perspective, right? I would say mm-hmm. the flip side is, as we work with many enterprise clients, security is ever prevalent, as it always has been, and ever so prevalent these days in terms of in the face of emerging attacks and threats. How does an organization look at leveraging the cyber defense matrix? Because they, you know, you have the categories, they have a slew of tools that they have existing on in-house today, no pun intended, but just what they have today, to identify gaps and understanding where they actually need to be going or to address and have a kind of an overall protective stance.
Yeah, so what I discovered beyond the simple use case of mapping vendors was that the matrix is a great organizational framework. It helps us organize a wide range of different types of information. Again, one of those types of information is just the vendors that you might have already purchased products in. But I discovered that I can organize other types of information. And I use a food analogy here. So if you think about these vendors that you already have in-house as ingredients in your cupboard or your pantry, well, then what's the equivalent of a recipe? What's the equivalent of allergies or nutritional needs? We know what the equivalent of the grocery store is, right? You go walk into the expo hall and you see a bunch of other vendors. But can I start organizing recipes? And it turns out I could. And CIS, for example, they've already organized much of their cybersecurity controls, their critical security controls, into the cyber defense matrix. So you can think of that as a recipe. Well, then what's an allergy? Well, it turns out security tends to break things in the business. It tends to create friction. It tends to we can't implement every possible security control that we want because, well, the business just rejects these controls, and they say, you know, we can't implement this control because it wrecks our ability to do business. That's an analogy, a business constraint, a mission constraint, some sort of constraint that prohibits our ability to fully implement some security control that we want. Then what are nutritional needs? Well, those are threats. Ransomware as a nutritional need. How do we characterize like what ransomware looks like in terms of the needs that are expressed through the matrix itself? And again, going back to CIS has what they call the community defense model, which interestingly enough has the same acronym as the cyber defense matrix. So we have this community defense model that articulates here are the needs, here are the kind of controls that are most applicable to web application attacks, most applicable to DDoS, most applicable to ransomware. And now we have this pattern that emerges that says, here's your nutritional needs. Here are your ingredients. Here are your recipes. Here are the allergies you need to watch out for. And then you combine that with whatever is available in the market. And it provides this way to organize these very disparate pieces of information into a consistent framework.
I think what would be really interesting, Sunil, is if you can dive into the framework a little bit. As you said earlier, you've got some NIST components, you've got some asset classes, you incorporate tech, process, people, et cetera. Can you describe what this framework is and the various ways that somebody should engage in that framework if they're just going down the path of doing something similar, which is evaluating where some of their gaps are, evaluating some new entrants into the market and trying to make sense of the space? Maybe you could start there.
Sure. Yeah. So it is a relatively simple framework that hopefully can serve as a mental model that people can carry around. So it consists of two dimensions. On one dimension, it's the five things that we do, and you can think of these as verbs. It's the five functions of the NIST cybersecurity framework, at least the current NIST cybersecurity framework. Identify, protect, detect, respond, recover. And then the other dimension are five things that we care about. You can think of these as nouns, and the five nouns are devices, applications, networks, data, and users. Now, undergirding this is something that I labeled a degree of dependency. And the degree of dependency shifts between people, process, and technology based on what functions we're performing. So if we're performing the function of identify, then we should depend heavily on technology, very little on people, and a decent amount of process for the function of identify. But as you go from identify to protect to detect to respond recover, the amount of dependency we have on technology starts to fade, and our dependency on people start to increase. Throughout the whole thing, the amount of process remains the same. But it's important to recognize that our dependency on technology starts to wane as you go from left to right, as you go from identify to protect to detect, respond, recover. And that actually has very significant implications. It has implications in terms of how we think about investment, whether you're VC or as a practitioner, because we absolutely want to invest a lot in technology on the preventative side of the equation, but on the reactive side, the detect, respond, recover, we're going to need really qualified people to be able to satisfy those needs. And so this changing degree of dependency is actually pretty interesting in its own right, and has revealed some other interesting dynamics that the model has helped. Now, I should also mention, one of my favorite quotes is George Box. He says, "All models are wrong, but some are useful." So this model is absolutely the wrong model for certain things. The Google Maps is extraordinarily useful, right? But if you ask me, how do I get to the bathroom in an office building, Google Maps is absolutely the wrong model to use. So likewise, the cyber defense matrix is absolutely the wrong model to use for very tactical questions around, hey, should I change this configuration setting from off to on, you know, or whatever else it might be. The cyber defense matrix is really a useful model at a much higher level. Think at the continent, maybe the country level. But as you start going down to the cities and the states and the cities and in the localities, it starts getting very congested. And it starts to lose utility, and other models become much more useful at those lower level of tactical detail.
Mm-hmm. So, Sunil, and just to bring it back maybe a little bit from the practitioner's view of things, right? Since you lived and breathed this stuff, Bank of America and onwards, and now, if you will, from a Jupiter One perspective, how are you seeing organizations adopt this model on a practical level? You work with CISOs on a regular basis. How are they actually espousing this as part of their strategy?
Yeah, great question. So regardless of whether you're dealing at the 50,000 foot level or the 25,000 foot level or 10,000 foot level or in the office level, we're trying to communicate directions. Regardless of whether you're dealing with a 50,000 foot level, 25,000 foot level, 10,000 foot level, 1,000 foot level, we're trying to communicate risk, mm-hmm. security risk. And we have to find the right model for each one. So yeah, MITRE ATT&CK is a favorite model of many people, and people try to map everything to it. Well, guess what? Sometimes it just doesn't work because it doesn't operate, for example, at the strategic level. You don't want to start talking about individual TTPs of an attacker at a board level. So again, the cyber defense matrix is a useful model at this more strategic level. And so where I have seen it most useful is when you're trying to communicate to more senior level audiences, to communicate overall strategy of your organization, overall gaps, the general direction that you want to head. So going back to my comment about layering the having the food analogy earlier, what I'm trying to communicate to a certain audience is, where am I today? Maybe we look at what ingredients you have today. Where do I need to be? And that could include things like your recipes and your nutritional needs. And how do I get there? And how do I get there is going to be based on what's available in the market and how do I avoid any allergies that might be in the way. This combination of where am I today, where do I want to be, and how do I get there is fundamentally what you're trying to present to to the board level audience. But you want to present it in a simple way that doesn't get too much into the weeds and too much into the details. And that's what the Cyber Defense Matrix actually helps us do. If you want to double click and get into a lower level detail, maybe the Cyber Defense Matrix is not the right model. But where I've seen it used very successfully is when people are trying to communicate at a more strategic level. I have definitely seen people try to use it at a lower level. And it does work to some degree. It starts breaking down a little bit when things get very congested, so to speak, in a given box. But nonetheless, when you take what you've combined into, you take all the detail that you've put into the matrix, then you take a step back and you look at it. I mean, literally, you take the piece of paper or the picture on your screen and zoom out. Then you start seeing the bigger picture. You start seeing the forest. And not get lost in the trees. That's really where the Cyber Defense Matrix has been useful, where you see these macro patterns that emerge and you wonder, what are we doing about these gaps that we have, or have we overinvested in a particular box because we just have so many things in there? Those are the kind of questions that usually emerge through the use of the matrix.
So a follow-on to that, Sunil, and given just the overall economic environment that exists out there, budgets are constrained. Everybody's trying to do more with less. I think this becomes ever so important. One, of course, you know, if you have a gap in your posture, you're going to address it, no budget aside and everything like that. But by the same token, you do really want to make sure that you're evaluating that strategy. So do you see that organizations should, if you will, not only read the Cyber Defense Matrix and apply it in their own way, or are you also seeing more of the consulting organizations out there that are saying, hey, this is fundamentally a framework we need to adopt because, you know, like you said, everyone does some sort of framework analysis out there, whether it's MITRE or anything else. So are you seeing the adaptation of this framework of yours as the Cyber Defense Matrix being applied in consulting and advisory back to organizations?
Yeah. In fact, so a lot of consultancies for sure. And it's sort of an equivalent type of consultancy, which is MSPs, have been very much embracing this model. And I think MSPs and consultants in particular because they're trying to communicate to an audience that may not necessarily have a lot of expertise in cybersecurity. So you're trying to communicate, again, these strategic level goals and doing it in a way that resonates easily with your audience. What I've also articulated is at the strategic level, one way to think about it is with the current economy, we can't spend endlessly. It's almost like you have a football team with a fixed number of players, right? 11 players, I think, whatever. And you can't just add a 12th player. You'd be penalized, right? So what do you do? You observe the attacker movements. You observe your opponent, and you change your defensive posture accordingly. And so the perspective that we can see in the context of, let's say, so one of the concerns that I typically get when I show the Cyber Defense Matrix is that people would say, oh my God, I thought I only had to worry about these problems. Now you're showing me like 25 boxes and you're telling me I got to cover all these? No, you can't. We're not playing blackout. We're trying to play bingo. Okay, and what are the minimum set of things that you need to be able to cover to be able to declare bingo? And each person's card is slightly different, but we're not trying to mark every box. We're just trying to mark just enough to be able to defend against the latest set of things that we're trying to deal with. And if we have to reallocate resources to do that, let's move a bingo chip from one box to another box so that we can still declare bingo. That means, however, at the same time, we're taking away resources from one part of the matrix. And maybe that's, again, it's a risk management decision, but maybe that's okay given the current circumstances that we feel like, you know what, I'm going to pull a player from the right side now over to the left side because I see the offense moving that way. All right, I mean, that's maybe it's a trick play, but at the end of the day, that may be the wisest decision given the current circumstances. And to be able to articulate this sort of perspective of what are you going to deprioritize when you choose to prioritize something else? And the cyber defense matrix, again, provides that strategic view to say, look, we are doing this not without, we recognize the whole picture. We see the big picture of the entire landscape of what we're having to deal with. And we're choosing to prioritize this, and at the same time, choosing to deprioritize these things. And if we deprioritize those things, and we get popped as a result of that, at least we knew what decision we were making ahead of time before we made that decision. If especially again with a fixed budget, we're coming in eyes wide open to say, yes, we're going to leave this part uncovered because we think that the offense is moving over here. And we make the wrong decision, we make the wrong decision. But I think 9 times out of 10, if not more, that will be the right decision, that is the right decision to make.
Yeah, that really speaks to the versatility of the framework, because as a consultant, I do want to fill in the boxes. And when I go to fill in the boxes, that helps define our kind of line card of offerings. And when I fill it in, I get to look at it and say, well, who's kind of the stalwarts that would be observed in this box typically? And then who's kind of the up and comer, someone that's challenging the status quo a little bit? Maybe where's the open source equivalent if a customer had an interest in there? So I look at the matrix to say, do we even have everything covered so that we can be effective consultants? And then the other thing I like about the matrix, and I haven't gone down this path enough, but there's then the, well, how mature are some of the companies or vendors or products in that box? And then, hey, if I have a box that's maybe challenging more of like when you say left and right of the boom, left and right of boom, if I look at where people typically have a heavier emphasis and we see some incumbents that are starting to really challenge maybe the people emphasis with a technology offset, maybe we place more emphasis on some of that when we're considering these vendors to go to market with. So I find it helpful for a lot of different contexts, depending on how I want to look at this. But my personal interest is, of course, fill in all the gaps. Then let's see where some of the maturity is, and then where can consolidation happen. So I think you're right. It's a framework that we then get to go to our customer and say, you don't necessarily, to your point earlier, have to focus on all of these boxes with equivalence, but we do want to have and speak intelligently about every single one of those boxes potentially. So I think it's a really versatile framework for folks, no matter where they sit in the spectrum of delivery or positioning or owning the operations of. So I find it helpful from that aspect.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things to do with the matrix on those boxes is actually to take one of those boxes and color it black, meaning I don't have to worry about whatever is happening in this box because I've removed attack surfaces altogether. And how wonderful is that when we have less to have to deal with altogether? This particular view of removing attack surfaces or not having to worry about security, addressing security by removing things that don't have to be secured at all, is something that I've recently tried to think about further. And that's actually represented in something else that I created called the DIE triad. So DIE stands for distributed, immutable, ephemeral. And it turns out the more I can make my devices or applications or networks or data, I'm not sure about the users yet, but the more I can make my assets distributed, immutable, and ephemeral, the more I can actually not even have to worry about securing those types of assets. I can turn those assets and turn those boxes, the equivalent boxes in the matrix, basically just black and say, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't need to worry about any controls here.
So Sunil, I would be remiss. We've talked about assets here, right? And we've talked about the overall NIST framework. How does Jupiter 1 apply, if you will, the cyber defense matrix structure because, well, I'll let you answer that question, and I'll tee it up for you, and then I'll maybe follow up for with a question here.
Sure. Yeah. So to answer your question from multiple angles, first of all, let me explain why I came to Jupyter One. So as I mentioned, I was at Bank of America. My first use case was mapping vendors, and I dreamed up all these other use cases of the cyber defense matrix. But when I started to write the book, I realized, wait, I'm struggling writing this book because these were just theories. These other ones were theories and not actual practice. Well, one of the theories was, can I anticipate new and emerging companies? Can I incubate new and emerging companies from using the matrix? And I went to YL Ventures, an Israeli venture capital firm, where I just spent time talking to entrepreneurs that had no idea, and I'm feeding them ideas based off the matrix. And it worked remarkably well as a use case. So I said, okay, well, this works for different use cases. Let me see if I can now design and run a whole security program based on that. And that's my thinking was, I can go to an existing company and I have to break it apart and remold the organization, or I can go to a startup where I can design a whole security program from scratch. And that's partly how I arrived at Jupyter One. But also, Jupyter One had a philosophy that I think aligned with my multi-asset view of the world. So the term asset, we typically think of assets as just being a device. But as you know from the cyber defense matrix, I think of assets as being devices, apps, networks, data, users, and a whole panoply of other things that make up our asset universe. And so it turns out that Jupyter One also had that similar sort of view of the world. Then there's another perspective I had, which was that in the book, I talk about structural awareness versus situational awareness. Left of boom is structural awareness. Right of boom is situational awareness. What is situational awareness? Something happens. You capture logs and activities. You correlate them, and you ask questions about them. And when you ask questions, you get situational awareness. In the book, I talk about this concept of structural awareness. But what is structural awareness? Well, it's actually the same sort of concept that we have in situational awareness. You take state information, you take your asset inventories, you take your CMDBs, you correlate it, and you ask questions about it. And then you get structural awareness. But we don't typically ask for more logs. We just say, I want more situational awareness. On the other end, though, we don't ask for structural awareness. We just say, we want more visibility. And we don't do anything with that as visibility. We basically just say, I want more eyes, but we don't really process what the eyes are showing you. We don't understand. We don't gain awareness of what those sensors are providing. Furthermore, it's not just, we don't want just what our eyes process. We want to understand what our hands process, what our ears process, what our noses process, and so on and so on. And the collective set of our senses is what helps us resolve helps us resolve the world around us. If I were holding, held this mug, okay, and I close my eyes, my hands would tell me, my two senses would tell me I'm holding two mugs, okay? But clearly I'm not. If I open my eyes, if I open my eyes, maybe my system will tell me I'm seeing three things. Four things, because I have two eyes, right? And my system is telling me I have four mugs in front of me, okay? But of course, that's not right. And so we need this correlation, this mechanism that helps us resolve our digital world in the same way, taking what we see, what we feel, what we touch, all these other, what we smell, what we hear, taste, and so on and so on. And these five senses that we have in our bodies, we have five types of asset classes as well. And instead of always asking for more visibility, could we actually derive the presence of something because we hear or we smell or we feel? Like, so you don't have eyes on the back of your head, but if you heard a loud bang, if you felt debris on your back, if you smelled acrid smoke, you probably already have a mental model of what happened without having eyes on the back of your head. And you may then take action accordingly, but the point is that you don't need that visibility, the literal visibility in the back of your head. You already know what happened based on prior mental models of these types of events.
Pretty compelling there. So if so, what we're saying here now is that Jupiter One is bringing all of this together in that view, right? From
providing your, structural awareness,
providing structural awareness of your environment, your asset classes that are out there, and basically applying a sensory component. So now you can actually make sense of the data that is coming from these assets.
Right. It's going beyond the ask for visibility and actually bringing awareness. That's what we call unified cyber insights, bringing these insights around our environment, unifying them together. But again, we don't ask for more logs. We want more situational awareness. The means to get that is through the logs, but we don't care. The logs is just the means, right? Same way, and the same comment I would make with visibility, we keep asking for more visibility, but what we really strive for is structural awareness. And if you're not taking the visibility you already have and making sense of it in this meaningful way, then trust me, you don't need more visibility. It's just more information overload.
Yeah, I would say that, Sunil, and generally, and you could probably share some of your perspectives here, which is that organizations, they're either heads down on the situational awareness from their, I guess, the SIM aspect, if you will, of things. And then from the structural side, they maybe it's just a swivel chair effect where they have different tools looking at different things out there. So they're not getting that structural view, right? And so Jupiter One is collecting telemetry, I suppose, from these assets and then bringing together. And so would you say it's a correlation function to add that sense of that kind of awareness and understanding collectively? Or how should I best interpret that?
Yeah, so there's two types of awareness, right? So one's based on events and activities, and the other one's based on state. So another good example would be the situational awareness is someone's walking around your house. That's situational awareness. Structural awareness is, are my doors locked? Are my windows locked? Is my alarm turned on, right? And if someone's walking around in your house, you will want to understand your state of your environment as quickly as possible, at which point, if those state parameters I just gave you are set properly, then, you know, I can relax a little bit and I don't have to sweat so hard. But if I struggle to get that state information, which is oftentimes a problem within many organizations, then I may be sweating until I have that state information at my fingertips. Other state information includes things like who owns this thing. Just that's oftentimes state information, but it's also hard to capture. And that ownership is not necessarily one that we need to know that is always available directly. It may be an indirect ownership thing. This asset is owned by this other asset. This person owns this asset, which interacts with this other asset. And from there, we can then derive ownership and other sort of things like that. Things like blast radius is structural awareness. These are all things that we, knowing what's vulnerable and being able to prioritize what's the most important structure in your environment, those are all structural awareness type of questions that we tend to struggle with. I would also say there's the systems that we use, like the traditional traditional relational databases work really well with streaming real-time information that comes in. However, those types of systems really suck at maintaining state. The systems that maintain state really well are like graph databases, but graph databases really suck at time series type of information. It's fascinating to see really the fact that there's these two completely disparate types of systems, one that's really well designed for events and activities, and the other one that's really well geared towards state, and they suck at the other side. So it's kind of interesting that we have these two different technologies. At some point, maybe those two technologies, some futures, they will have them converge in some meaningful way. But until then, we do maintain two separate systems, a SIM for the sake of the events and activities, and then some sort of state-based system that provides that structural awareness.
I think that's what a lot of our customers are looking for is we have to somehow map the changes in state. We have to correlate those back to temporal conditions. We have to make all of this as close to real time as possible. We're injecting change into a system that Historically, we've never seen this degree before. And we have to make sense of all of this rapidly so that we can make decisions. And I think that's a wonderfully complex challenge to solve. One that I think Jupiter One is taking on.
In that at space. Least on the state side of the equation, yes.
Yeah. No, we appreciate that.
All right. Well, Sunil, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Learned a lot, not only about the cyber defense matrix. So for our listeners, please go out, buy a copy, read it, apply it. And for others that are struggling from our client base, as well as general listener base on understanding how to apply it, you can always reach out to Sunil. You can reach out to us. We'd be glad to answer any questions and also weave in Jupiter One to help you guys as needed. Again, Sunil, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share a passion project of mine. And I hope that people can find interesting ways to put it to use, ways that I hadn't thought about. And if people do find interesting use cases, definitely, please reach out to me. And I'm happy to hear you out.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.